Lecture 8 on our wonderful journey into knowing ourselves. It's a wonderful journey, isn't it? Think about it. Getting to know me is intensive work. How about that? Getting to know me is intensive work. And it is intensive work because it requires a lot of attention. You think it's real easy getting to know me. That's yourself. You think it's real easy getting to know yourself and getting to know who you are and getting to know what your desires are in life and where you're going. Well, everybody who comes into my world thinking they know what they're doing. And as soon as they're in my world, they find out that I'm only here to confuse them. I'm only here to drive them crazy, to make them unsatisfied with what they have done up to now and with the dreams that they have for themselves for the present. My purpose is to make them feel totally empty and totally lost. And when they feel totally empty and totally lost and are right at the bottom of their attitude about themselves, then point out to them that they're nearer to God than they know. You're not near to God when you're up high because you don't pay any attention to your divinity. You pay attention to the worldly experiences that you're going through. When you win the sweepstakes and you find the perfect girl or the perfect guy, you have your perfect home, you have your perfect children, you have your perfect everything. Ha 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 ha. And then kaboom, a war comes along and your house is blown up and your world is torn apart, or you have to go to war somewhere else and you get blown up and torn apart. And then you say, why me, O Lord? I had everything going so good for me. Everything was going so wonderful for me. Why did this have to happen to me? Well, you were riding on how you came into this world. And let me explain that point. That's a very good point. How did you come into this world? It's pretty rotten, really. You see, you came into this world like Jerome over here. You came into this world absolutely perfect, expressing your original purity and integrity. You say, well, some bodies weren't perfect when they came in this world. Some bodies had problems. Okay. Let's allow for that. But let's go on and say the majority of the babies that are born in this world are born perfect, okay? If you have 7 billion people on the face of the earth today, there's only a couple million that are born imperfect. Even if you said 1 billion, that's still a minority. Unnecessary, but a minority. Let's handle those imperfect births first, okay? Get them off our mind. Some children choose to come into this experience to have as great a challenge as they can have. And so they choose to be born in a body that is maimed in some way, that has heart problems, lung problems, kidney problems, leg problems, Chernobyl problems where they are, their legs or arms are shriveled up or something, you know. That's tough. Mongoloid, you know. That's tough. Mentally unbalanced. That's tough. It's a minority, I assure you, the minority. Does it take the entire city of New York to house the mentally deficient people? Answer me, no. It takes a couple of buildings. But you see, probably the people who are mentally deficient, at least considered that way, are probably more normal than we are, and we all should be in the hospital. So maybe that's the correct statement, that the majority of the houses in New York City are filled with mentally deficient people. Because the people who are in the hospital, they like themselves, basically. They escape from this world of must, need, have, do things, and they just go and have a ball. Okay, now let's go back to the children who are born with bodies with no problems, all right? Every cell in their body knows what it's supposed to do and does it perfectly. They have sufficient vitamins and minerals and things in their body to function. Let's digress for a moment. Take a look at a chicken. How does a chicken produce so much calcium around the egg? Where does the chicken get all that calcium? How does the chicken produce albumin, the yolk of the egg, the white of the egg? How does a chicken produce the sac that goes around the egg? Every day the chicken pops out, boop, 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 3, 4, 5 eggs, maybe more. Some are lazy, one a week or something, you know. But how do they pop them out? And they're not fertile eggs. They haven't been fertilized. They're just unfertile eggs, just normal eggs that we enjoy eating. No. Why do they pop them out like that? Where do they get all the vitamins and minerals and things that go into it? Because in that egg has to be all of the nutritious material necessary for that little chick to develop into a chicken. It's very necessary. Now, how do they do it? How do they do that miracle? Well, they do it. We haven't figured out how they do it. We're not really too worried how they do it, but they do it. How do you? You mothers and you fathers produce children. You have a sperm and an egg that gets together, and you fertilize that egg, which the chickens don't fertilize too many of their eggs. You fertilize that egg, and then that egg grows into a child. And basically, the egg has within it all of the essential needs of a human body. The egg has within it the essential needs, not the mother feeding the egg her bodily fluids that are necessary for the egg to grow. But the egg has within it already all that magic. And sometimes there's a mismatch in there. Sometimes there's an imperfection. Sometimes there's a bad leg or arm or lung or whatever. But it's a minority. It's a false activity that takes place somewhere. And we can spend time on what it is, calling it the mental attitude of whatever it may be. But let's release that for the moment, because that's really not our topic. Our topic is the positive aspect. Okay, we take these 6 billion children, 6 billion, 7 billion people. The majority of them are healthy and hearty, whether they live in third world countries or in first world countries. Sometimes they're better off in third world countries. But they live, and they grow into healthy, happy, harmonious beings. Some of them, their parents tell them they don't have enough food to eat, and they don't have enough vitamins and minerals, and that they will be deficient in certain areas, and they are. Some of their parents don't know that much information and don't tell their children those things, and they're not. It's an interesting thing. How do they function in these areas? We have a body. The children all have bodies that are beautiful, and they grow beautiful, and they would continue to grow beautiful their entire lifetime without one single flaw. Except that race consciousness gets to work on them and tells them they're supposed to have colds, and they're supposed to be sick, they're supposed to be bothered by the cold, by the heat, by the rain, by microbes and bacteria and all sorts of things that dwell upon the face of the earth and always have and always will. They're supposed to be disturbed by them. The parents don't tell the children that they're immune to anything other than themselves. They are a absolutely perfect vehicle, untouchable by anything other than itself. You understand that? You understand that? Should parents be able to do such a thing, the children would have a very easy role. Okay. Well, the children create themselves living in an environment of poor family or rich family or moderate family, it doesn't matter. But in that family, whatever is the philosophy of the family becomes the philosophy of the child. Regardless that the child came into the world with its original purity and integrity. And then it gets even better, because then the child begins to think that it will produce imperfect beings. And so it says of its little child being born into its family, I see this child whole and perfect. I see this child with tongue in cheek, you know, like that, doubting that the child will be whole and perfect, because in their family, they have always had certain diseases. In their family, they've always had certain problems. They died young or died old or whatever they died. In our family, Ellen keeps telling us, in her family, they didn't die till they're in their 90s. And they were healthy and filthy and fat and wise until they were 95, you know, or 8 or 9 or whatever it was. And what's she going to be now? Ellen's probably going to be 190, you know, 590. Who knows what she's going to do? We have no idea what this crazy girl is going to do. But one day she's going to find herself. And when she does, she's going to return to her attitude that she had when she was a little girl. Because when she was a little girl, she could do anything. She could go anywhere, be anything. And she didn't know what cold was. She didn't know what hot was. She didn't know what no was and what yes was. She only knew to do. The same with all of you. You haven't told me your story of your childhood as much as Ellen has. Ellen just loves to tell the story of her childhood. It's like the story of Jesus. They love to tell the story. So you love to tell the story of your perfection, of your youth, of your vitality, of your continuing perfection, okay? Now, getting to know me, getting to know yourself, is intensive work. And the reason it's intensive work is my outer world distracts me from my inner search. And this is what all of you have been playing with and getting unhappy about. And you're very, very unfortunate for doing that. I would say stupid, but then I would call myself stupid too. But you're very unfortunate for doing this. You're wasting your time. My outer world distracts me from my inner search. What is the most difficult thing for any of you to do? Jerome, what's the most difficult thing for any of these people to do? Jerome, what's the most difficult thing? Yes, that's right. The most difficult thing for them to do is to introspect within themselves, to be quietly listening within themselves. Is that what you meant? I thought so. So this is the most difficult thing for any of us to do, is to listen within. To listen within. To be quiet and listen within. My outer world distracts me from my inner search constantly, constantly, constantly. My outer world is constantly saying to me, hey, that's not important. What's important is what's going on out here. Hey, noise, noise, boom, 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 boom box, loud noises in your ears, bust up your ears. And perhaps it's a good thing to bust up your ears, because then you don't hear that loud noise anymore. But all this silly, silly, silly stuff. You see, it's crazy. And then we wonder why we have trouble listening within. Now, you're a new mother and a new father, and you're in your bedroom, and you put the baby in its own crib in its bedroom, just across the hall from your room. The doors are wide open. You go to bed, and you go to sleep. Your eyes are wide open. And then you hear a little creak, creak, as the baby turns over some, oh, what's wrong with the baby? And you jump out of bed, both of you, and you go and look. Oh, 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 my angel. Oh, oh, you're okay. You're okay. And then you both go back to bed again. And 10 seconds later, however long it really is, doesn't matter. But 10 seconds later, you hear the baby go, oh, oh, and you dash in to see what's going on. Are you all right, sweetheart? Are you all right? And of course, the little baby said, I got attention. It's so nice. I'm master of my world. Whenever I want attention, it comes to me. Whenever I want food, it comes to me. When I want my diapers changed, just go, and immediately they're changed. Oh, they don't want me to have diaper rash, and they don't know that I make that myself. I do that just because I like to make them feel sorry for themselves for not changing my pants as often as they should, you know. But it's just my control. You think kids don't know that? You don't know babies. Babies are just as intelligent as any human being is at any age. They just lack the ability to tell it, to speak it, they don't have the ability yet to form the words that they want, because we said they can't. Now, if you ever saw the movie Baby Talk, it's kind of charming. These little babies are talking to each other in their cribs, and they're talking in the womb. They're, you know, going to the Lamaze class, and so the babies are talking back and forth between the mummy's wombs, and they're saying, "Boy, is your mama giving you as hard a time as mine is? Mine is just eating all these foods that are supposed to be so good for me, and they're yuck. You know, I like steak and potatoes." And the other kid says, "Oh, you know how it is. My mom, she drinks beer. And I tell you, I love that stuff. I think that beer is the greatest thing. That just makes me feel like I'm floating on air." And the other little baby says, "What? Your mom drinks beer while she's pregnant with you?" "Oh, sure. She's not worried about it. She says nothing happened. She's had 8 kids already, and every one of them turned out just fine, not bothered by the beer at all." "Well, I'll have to tell my mommy to drink some beer. I know how to do it. I'll send up taste buds to her mouth, like I do for ice cream and for strawberries and for pickles and cheese and other things, you know. And I'll send up taste buds to her mouth to have some beer. And she'll say, 'I feel like a beer. I know I shouldn't have it, but I feel like a beer. I gotta have a beer.' And so she gets a beer, and then the little baby says, 'Oh, I see what you mean, you know. It's kind of cool, you know.'" And, you know, silly stuff. You laugh, you say, "Oh, come on now." But it's true. That's just the way it works. A baby gets whatever it wants, however it needs to get it. If a baby needs to have certain minerals and vitamins, what have you, that you're not giving, he'll eat it off of his crib. He'll chew the wood. He'll chew the paint. And he'll come out just fine. But just be careful there's no lead in the paint. And really, that amount of lead is not that much difference. But some people think it is, so therefore, for their children, it is. But think of that. Okay, your outer world distracts you. Now, these kids in the womb, they're living in an inner world. It's warm and nice, and mama doesn't do too much exercises, so they're not shook up too much. And they're coming along just fine, healthy as can be. Attitude, not too bad, but mama starts reading things in magazines that there is a situation going on about babies, that babies are coming out this season with bad teeth or this or that or the other thing. And so mama says, "Oh, I hope my baby doesn't have bad teeth." Well, she's giving bad teeth to the baby. Mm-hmm. If the mother says, "My child has perfect teeth," if that's her choice, "My child is perfect. My child is fantastic. Oh, I hope. Hope is doubt." And every time we say we hope anything, we're doubting that whatever it is we hope for is going to take place, and we have just taken its power right away from it. So we want to be real careful about that. But my outer world distracts me from my inner search. Little babies are born on the inner search. You know that. Don't you think that the little baby is concerned about what that sperm is doing and how it's trying to get into that egg and how it's trying to impregnate that egg so that that egg will become the body? They don't want just any sperm. They've checked out all these millions of sperms that are floating around and trying to play a game there. And they say, "I want this one here. This one comes from the type of genes and chromosomes and DNA that I want. I got my computer on real good here. I'm just an egg, but I know what I'm doing." And so when the sperm comes along that's got that perfect structure about it, the egg gives him a little soft spot so he can pump right through. And he gets right in there, and the two of them are companions, and they've got the male and the female aspects, and they create a beautiful being, a beautiful, wonderful being. You see, this is how life is formed. And the egg knows what it's doing, and the sperm knows what they're doing. Every sperm thinks that it's number one, but only one is going to get it. Only one is going to make the trip eventually, unless there's multiple eggs. But think about it. Think about it. Every one of those sperm think that they're number one. They are part of the life force. Every egg that is ever brought into existence by a human body or any type of body is a number one egg. Some of them don't have a chance to do anything. They become fried eggs and things like that. But nonetheless, they all believe that they were number one. Have you ever seen a fried egg that was not perfect? I don't mean that the shape of it and so forth, but it had everything in it. The yolk, the albumin, it had the everything about it. Everything about the egg was perfect. And it knew what it was doing. And when an egg was bad, what do? It got bad only because you hadn't refrigerated it properly or something. But the eggs are all perfect. They're all perfect. And that's a beautiful thing. This is how we are. You see, they learn, babies and eggs and stuff like that, learn how to meditate. Meditation is what they do. Introspection is what they do from the day one. And the day one starts long before the day two starts, you know. And they're really listening within. They're really paying attention. Well, you know, you think that the baby's birth comes at the moment it comes into the world. Baby's birth comes at the moment that an egg and a sperm decided to dance together. And at that time, life begins, at least in that form. So think about it. Think about it very carefully. You've been in meditation and introspection from the beginning of your life, from the beginning of your days. You've always done it beautifully. And then what happens? Then you're born into a world. And the first thing they want you to do is get your eyes open. They've got your ears open already. You're already hearing all these strange sounds out there. Shh, be quiet, the baby's asleep. Shh, be quiet. And the baby pretends it's asleep a lot of times because it likes it to be quiet, you know. And so the baby is sleeping. And then it decides to open its eyes. And the moment it decides to open its eyes, its introspection stops. It begins to take a 100% look at the world about it and be distracted by the world about it. And as it's distracted by the world about it, it no longer is in intensive introspection. It becomes distracted. You become distracted. I become distracted. It's a very sad moment. Because at that moment, we have said, our reality is outside, not inside. Our reality is outside, not inside. Our reality is outside, not inside. And we believe that. We believe that with all of our heart and soul and being. We believe that beyond any imagination, we believe that. What you seize is what you get. Take all the pleasure that you can get, for this is the only time around. You hear that. That's said by very Christian people, very religious people, very spiritually minded people, because they think that this one life experience is all that we will have. And perhaps it is. Perhaps it is. Perhaps the people who think this one life experience is all they're going to have create themselves having only one life experience. Now, it doesn't mean being born again, doesn't mean reincarnation, it doesn't mean all of these things. It only means that whatever you choose to do, you can do. Don't forget, you were fighting around playing games as a sperm and an egg, remember? Don't forget, you were fighting around playing the game of sperm and egg before you ever became an egg. Because as you were in the body of the female, you were creating yourself out of the essence of nothing into the allness as an egg, and in the male as the sperm, as the instrument that is necessary to make the egg be a viable, I don't want to say human form, a viable life form like a snake or a cobra, you know, or a polar bear, or a dog or a cat or a human being. It doesn't make any difference. But as I say, the days of introspection stop when we begin to look around and be distracted by the world. Now, there are two types of distractions. One type of distraction is, I am bothered by the world. It is manipulating me, it's controlling me, it's causing me to not get enough to eat because I live in an impoverished condition. It causes me to be disturbed. It causes me to be uptight in some ways. And then there's another type of a birth, an awakening. The child hears noises and makes music out of it. The child hears people's voices, unhappy voices, and immediately translates them into joyful sounds. You can, you know. Christina is talking to Jerome here, translating the lecture here into German for him and to Switzerdeutsch. And do you know what she's saying? She is telling him, she is saying, Jerome, you are a beautiful young man. Jerome, you can accomplish anything you want in life. Jerome, you are fantastic. And Jerome says, is Herb saying all that? And Christina says, yes. And so she goes on, Jerome, you are the most beautiful child on the face of the earth. Jerome, you are wonderful. Jerome, you are capable of doing anything. Herb saying all that stuff. Why doesn't he talk to the other people too? Because Jerome, you're the only one here that's important now. And that's why I'm talking to you. But can you see? She may not use those words, but by her personal attention to him, each person who's translating for him, by your personal attention to him, he thinks he's wonderful. He knows it, in fact. He thinks that he's getting this personal attention because he's such a fabulous kid, and he is. But he's created this. He did not ask for anyone to interpret for him. He did not ask for any special privileges. He just is so beautiful, so content, so loving, so self-satisfied, and in a good way, that we want to do everything we can for him. We all want to interpret for him. We all want to make sure he understands what things are being said, and he understands far better than any words we can ever give him. But we play our game because it makes us feel good. And that's a good part of it too. Okay. So, it is intensive to remain consistent while listening within. It's tough. It's tough to remain consistent while listening within. Because while we're on our introspective journey, while we're listening within, what are we doing? While we're listening within, we are judging. We are judging all the things that come to our attention. We are judging all the words that come to our attention and all the ideas that come to our attention. We're judging everybody in our world. We're looking at them and we're saying, they're nice and they're not so nice. They're pretty and they're not so pretty. They're intelligent and they're not intelligent. I like them as a friend, I don't like them as a friend. Or, they're my close friends and they're my next to close friends. You see, judging, and it doesn't mean that you're being a bad judge, it means that you're just being a logical, reasonable being as a human being. Now, again, introspection ceases when you do that. It must. Because if you would listen within, you would be looking through each person that you'd be talking to, and what would you see? Buck, buck. Buck, buck. You'd see yourself. Of course you'd see God because you're God, but you would see yourself. You would see yourself in them. And as you see, could you ever not like yourself? You know, should you ever not like yourself? You should like yourself. So if you see yourself in everybody, you like everybody because they're yourself. You look at people and you see them doing things that you like to do. You look at circumstances and you see them being the way you like them to be. You look at the movies and you see them exactly the kind of movies that you like. And you don't know any movies exist other than the kind that you like because they're not brought to your attention. You don't know any human being on the face of the earth who you do not like because every person on the face of the earth brought to your attention by yourself or by, it has to be by yourself, doesn't it? Any person brought to your attention by yourself is a reflection of yourself, and it's beautiful, wonderful, fabulous. Now, to remain consistent listening within and seeing everyone as a reflection of yourself is a very difficult task from the point of view that we tend to judge. And we say, well, they're just about like me, or they're sort of like me, or I would never do that. How do you know? How do you know? Maybe you, under the same circumstances that they were, you would do the same thing. But you see, you judge yourself. And what did God say in Genesis as we read? Everything is
good and very good.
Everything is good and very good. Could you, as God, in you, as you, consider that you could ever create anything less than yourself? No. You, as God, can only create God. God, as God, can only create God. Allness can only create the allness. Anything that comes out of the allness is the allness. Now, any sperm that comes out is an indication of the perfect being that stands behind it. Any egg that comes out is a perfect expression of the magnificent being that stands behind the egg. So, when you have two fantastic beings bringing forth one object, that's quite good. You have multiplied by two what that is. And then when that one object develops itself into its own creative beingness, how wonderful that is. You see, we have to remain consistent by saying, I am whole and perfect, I am wonderful, I am intelligent, I am God, I am the creator of my world. We have to say those things. When something comes along that's not consistent with what we are, we have to immediately turn our attention from it. You're driving down the road, and you sense that there's an accident up ahead because the traffic is slowing down. And so you sense that the accident is on the left lane or the right lane or whatever, and you consider driving wherever. Well, now, I don't. When I'm driving down the road, I drive down the road. If it slows down, I have time to meditate. If it goes faster, I have time to pay attention to my driving. And if we drive by an incident, I don't even see it. I will not turn my face toward it to look at it. I will not include the mental picture of it in my world, the physical picture of it in my world. I bless it, I say, all is in divine order, and leave it be. All is in divine order, and leave it be. All is in divine order, and leave it be. Then I go on my way, and traffic speeds up after it goes by the incident. And people just move right along. The rubbernecking has stopped. Everybody's checking in the accident or incident to see what's going on. They're now past it. It's wonderful. One day I was driving down the road, I told you a little about it, and I was coming back from visiting May. And as I was driving through Irvine on the freeway, there was four lanes of two or more passenger driving cars. You know, they had a lot of that space. And all of a sudden there were no cars on it. And then a van, a white van, came zooming along, followed by about 8 or 10 Irvine police cars. And as the white van drove along, the driver was throwing out the window bundles of money, just throwing it out. Well, naturally, the people on the freeway stopped to help the police pick it up. And they all stopped to help the police pick it up and gave it to the policeman, who stuck in his shirt and stuck in his pants and stuck it wherever he could stick it, you know, because he wasn't really prepared to pick up that many bundles of money. But and then other motorcycle cops came along and they helped pick it up, and they looked like fat women. It was really quite interesting, charming. But the truck went along and the police cars went zipping after it and zooming along. And finally, they brought the truck to a halt. And they put the man in one of the police cars, and then they drove him away. Well, apparently he had robbed a bank somewhere or something, and he had taken the money, and when he decided he couldn't have the money, he was going to give it to the world, you know, throw it out the window. All the evidence is gone, you know. But it was interesting, and some of the money blew into the passenger lanes, you know, and the people had stopped and picked it up, and I was watching them, and every person who picked up money took it to the police officer. Not one of them stuck it in their pocket. because, you know, we were watching the audience. We were seeing just how honest these people were. We were saying, my, these people are certainly honest. They are wonderfully, and they were. They were. Why did that man rob the bank? Why did he have that incident right before us? Why did he throw the money out the window? And why did the people pick it up? And why did the cops come along with their motorcycle car to pick up the money from the people who were picking it up off the street? Why? Part of the game of life. Part of the non-judgment game of life. Was the bandit a bad man? That's somebody else's business. Was the incident charming and amusing? Yes. Was there any injury to anybody? No. The van was in the middle of the multiple passenger lane, you know, where you have two or more people in the car, and he had three or four lanes, almost five lanes, with nothing in it. And here the other traffic lanes were full, and we were the theater. We were the audience watching the play. None of us judging. We didn't say, go get that guy. We had nothing against him. He did what he did, and he is being apprehended, and he will have to be taken to task for what he did, and that's fine. That's his business. But we didn't make anything out of it. We didn't say anything about it. We didn't feel badly about it. We just thought it was an interesting adventure that we went to the theater without having to pay anything. right there in front of us. And then as soon as that was over, we drove on down the freeway at 70 plus miles an hour, oftentimes even 80, and on to our destination. To tell our family and friends of the fascinating experiences of the day along the way. Not touched by it at all. Did we judge the man? No. Who cares? Did we judge the cops? No. They were doing their thing. Did we judge the people who jumped out of their cars to pick up the money? Hey, that'd been fun, you know. But we just watched. And we're just an audience. We were untouched and we were unconcerned. Now, can you go through life and have these wonderful adventures take place around you and be untouched? Just move right through life. Be untouched by these things that people think are so terrible. And are they terrible? No. They're just wonderful. They're just part of the story of life. Was it ugly that he robbed the bank and that he did this and that? No. Did he shoot the teller? No. Did he have a gun? Probably not. Put it in his pocket. One bandit one time was robbing a bank, and he had his hand in his pocket, which was representing his gun, and he was robbing the bank, and pretty soon he had to direct the teller where to put the money in there, you know. He's had the gun out here. And when they realized he didn't have a gun, he just had his thumb. they called the police and picked him up. But, you know, that type of robbery was not considered too bad because he didn't have a real gun, you know. But nonetheless, it was not acceptable. So this is the way life goes. You can find humor in it. You can find joy in it. Don't judge. Don't judge. Just listen and enjoy as the clouds roll by. Because the clouds in the sky will have pictures. They'll have elephants marching along. They'll have fish swimming through the sky. They'll have mountains. They'll have a picture of your mom if you like it. Your mom with all her finery and her lovely dress that she never wore, you know, that just sort of flares out in a beautiful way. And you see your brothers and sisters sort of having a fight up there, playing and rolling and tumbling with each other. You can see anything you want in the sky. And it's just as real as what you see at the theater on the freeway or anywhere else in life. We give that such attention and we give that such a belief that it's foolish. But we give it the attention. And in giving it the attention, what we are doing is we are taking our attention away from our own intensive awareness of who and what we are. Now, how do you return to original purity and integrity? How do you return to being the innocent being that the youngsters are? How do you have that in your life? And then, if I could just get this message across to you. Words fail me too much on this, but I shouldn't say that because then they fail me. How do you get this message across to you when I want to say to you, if you can train yourself intensively in introspection and really learn how to listen within, then you will know what it is that you choose to do to make this life fulfilled for yourself. That's all. If you will listen within. Now, if you're going to go to school and you're going to knit while the teacher is teaching you and you won't understand what's going on, then don't expect to get a good grade in that class, because you'll fail. You'll fail because you're not giving it your full attention. And don't expect to become a great violinist if you don't practice. Now, Mozart notwithstanding, don't expect to be something that's fabulous when you are not now showing the genius in that area. You want to practice, practice, practice. You want to listen, listen, listen. You want to be guided by your own indwelling purity and goodness. And when you're guided by your own indwelling purity and goodness, do you know what comes to you? The perfect ideas of just what you wanted to do. Ah, yes, I had a glimpse of that at one time. I thought I'd like to do that. But now I see what I mean. This is really what I want to do. This is really where I want to go. This is really how I want to act. This is really what is important to me. Do you follow me? You don't know what you're going to tell yourself until you quiet yourself so you can tell yourself. You keep talking, 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 and not listening to yourself, and then you wonder why you're missing the boat, why you're not hearing the story of what it is that you really want to do. Now, none of you are immune to that. None of you are immune to the thought that I know that I know that I know. You're all still working on that, and it's nice, and that's not late. But the moment you pass into the realization that when you have taught yourself, trained yourself into introspection, then all is revealed to you. Well, that's learning, isn't it? All is revealed to you. That's like going to school. All is revealed to you. That's having the knowledge of the universe revealed to you, made known to you. Do you understand that? You can have it. You can have it right now. You can know what your goal is in life, what your game is in life. Now, Jerome here isn't yet 12. And Jesus, when he was 12, he was bothered by the priests in the temple. And so he stopped in and he says, "Hey guys, I got a message for you." And they say, "Well, punk, what do you got to say?" And he says, "Well, direct from God, believe in yourself and you can accomplish anything you want." And they say, "That's direct from God? God says believe in him and we can accomplish anything we want." "Well, that's what I said. Believe in yourself and you can accomplish anything you want." "No, no, no, no. God said believe in him." And Jesus said, "Well, where is him?" And they said, "Well, him is in out there in the temple. Him is way out there, you know." And Jesus said, "No. Him is in here, because him created us, and him is who we are. Him is the allness that we are." And they said, "Look, kid, you think you're pretty bright, don't you?" And Jesus said, "Look, sir, God is bright. I merely listen and tell you what God says to me." And the priest says, "Oh, my God, my God, my God." And his mother came along and said, "Jesus, come on, time to go home." And so he left. But do you think those priests had a new image of things? Do you think that they perhaps looked at life from a new point of view, from the point of view of God within? Do you think that anywhere in the Old Testament they teach that God is within? Everywhere. Where did the statement come in the Bible at all, that ye are God? Where did it come from? It came from the Old Testament. Where did the statement say that the Son of God, or that God himself would come upon earth and would do things in the being of man? It said it in the Old Testament. And so Jesus was teaching these wonderful priests, these wonderful rabbis, all about what their Bible taught them. And they said, whoops, we got to go back to the drawing board. We got to read that book again. We missed it. But you see, they looked for the adventure story. They looked for the adventure story, and in looking for the adventure story, they missed the spiritual story. And I must say, all of you who have finished reading Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East, most of you know the adventure story, but you don't know the spiritual story. You don't know the deep spiritual story of the various aspects of the book, which are quite beautiful. And if you've read Living with the Himalayan Masters, and you read that, it's just a fascinating story. Swami Rama does so many wonderful, delightful, charming things, and junky things, dumb things, you know. And he writes it because it's the autobiography. It is the story, that's the autobiography of yoga. But Living with the Himalayan Masters, it was an autobiography of yoga, of Swami Rama. And he tells of all the things he did, but he doesn't preach. He doesn't preach. He let his illustrations preach. He lets his illustrations preach, as he had to go to one guru up on the hillside, and the guru happened to be a naked guru and fat, and he didn't appreciate that because his own master was so slim and so proper in every way. And so he bent down and he wanted to kiss this naked master's foot, as was the response for him. And he had such aversion, such revulsion to the naked master, that the naked master knew exactly where he stood. And so as he kissed the naked master's foot, he kicked him, and he rolled down this stony hill into the creek. Well, he came back. You got to give him credit for that. He came back, and the master says, when you are ready to learn, then I'll be happy to share with you. Your master sent you here because you're ready for the next step, he thought. But apparently, not just yet. So you come back when you're ready. You see, this is how it goes. And another time, he was speaking, that is, he was sent to be with another master. And the master was speaking on a platform by himself, sitting up on the dais. And Swami Rama went there, and he was supposed to be with this master. He always sat next to his master as he was learning. So he got up in the rostrum, sat next to this master up there, and took a place of equal importance to this master where he was there to learn. Well, the story continues with a little shake-up in there. You'll enjoy it if you haven't read it. But humility is so difficult to come by from some of us. And in having it be difficult to come by, we don't learn as quickly as we can. And we lose sight of the whole story. And what is the whole story? The whole story is that right now you are God. Right now you are the allness. Right now you are the ascended consciousness of all peace and all goodness and all right action. Right now. Right now there is nothing that is left undone for you and for me. I appear cold and insensitive when I am self-directed. You know that? When I am self-directed, I feel other people think that I am cold and insensitive. I go in to see my sister and I say to her, you're home perfect, you're home perfect, you're home perfect. Will you shut up? And so I say it silently and know it for her. But I want her to have these thoughts impregnated into her consciousness. And she thinks I'm cold and insensitive when I do that. She knows I'm not cold and insensitive, but she thinks that I am when I do that. And when the doctor says to you, now this is going to hurt a little bit when he put this medicine on here, when he put this mercuricome on here or whatever, and a little bit, my God, it hurt, you know. And you're so cold and insensitive, you say to the doctor, as though he didn't know that it was really going to hurt. But he doesn't want to, he shouldn't really tell you that it's going to hurt. He just put it on and then you react how you will. But to tell you ahead of time, it hurts twice then, which is kind of silly. But you're considered cold and insensitive when you are not concerned as to how it feels, but you know that it's good for them. So I appear cold and insensitive when I allow these things to happen and when I'm self-directed, but that's okay. That's okay. I can handle it. I know who I am. I know what I am. I know where I am. I know what my values are. Do you know what your values are? Do you know where you're going? Do you know what you're doing? Do you know that you're already doing what you want to do more than anything in the world? Right now, each one of you is fulfilling the dream of your life. Right now. Right now, each one of you is fulfilling the dream. And it's not being here at the monastery. Not listening to me. But right now, each one of you know exactly what you want to do with your life. Each one of you have an inside track, and you listen intensely into your own inner self, and you hear the answer. It's fantastic. I can only hear the positive in me and in my creation. Turn yourself to that. Only hear the positive in you and in your creation. Anything other than that is not worth listening to. But there's a safe falling down from the sky. Move out from underneath it. Why? Splat. You just disposed of one body. But why would a safe fall on you from the sky? Why would anything injure you? Why would anything ever touch you? You live in your
ideal
spirit, mind, and body. And your ideal spirit, mind, and body does not include being squished. Your ideal spirit, mind, and body does not include having diseases or having illnesses of any kind. Your ideal spirit, mind, and body does include wholeness and perfection, right action, peace, truth, love, abundance, prosperity in every way, spiritual illumination in every way. Remember that. That's what your body is calling for right now, and that's who you are right now. I can only hear the positive in me and in my creation. How about you? Can you only hear the positive in you and in your creation? Can you only see the good in the world about you? Can you only know who you are? Now, I'm going to make a silly statement, and I'll back it up in a minute. The statement is, I am your example. I am your example. You look at me and you see perfect man, perfect God. You look at me and you see perfect man, perfect God. I am your example. You created me as your example of a perfect man, perfect God. You created that right now. You say, boy, Herb, that is really cheeky. That is really whatever it is, you know, it's not nice. But is it? I created each one of you perfect in my life. I created each one of you as a mirror for me. And you don't have any difficulty accepting that fact. And you see, you're playing a game now. You're pretending that your human bodies are whatever they are. You're pretending that your mind is whatever it is. But I have the privilege, as you do, of looking right past your bodies, right past your thinking aura, and seeing the purity within you. Beautiful. Unsullied by anything. Magnificent in every possible way. That's who you are. That's how I see you. That's how I know you. Now, that's how you can know yourself. That's a wonderful thing, isn't it? Can you therefore say, well, Herb, you're crazy, saying that you are the role model for us, that you are the image for us, that you are the ideal archetypal expression of who we are? No. Mm-mm. Because it's true. We each are the pure archetypal expression for each other. Because we are our creation. Is God in all it creates? Bitte?
Yes.
Are we in all we create?
Yes.
Is all we create us?
Yes.
Then I'm not wrong, am I?
No.
So think on these things. give them a lot of attention, because I want you to be ready for this next show. It goes on tomorrow morning, Saturday morning, and it says, I prove it works. So, see you then with bells on, and I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.